What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
This episode, we hear from Professor Hope Harrison. Professor Harrison was in the air on her way to Berlin when the Berlin Wall fell, and she spent 10 days thereafter in the city absorbing the experience. She has since become a professor at George Washington University on history, and she's written a number of books, including After the Berlin Wall, Memory and the Making of the New Germany, 1989 to the present. Here, she gives her experiences.
So on November 9th, 1989, when the wall fell by surprise, I happened to be on a plane headed from the U.S. to West Berlin, knowing nothing of what was happening on the ground. Talk about an amazing stroke of luck. So I was with a group of graduate students from Harvard and Stanford, brought to West Berlin. Every year they brought a group of students, and we left Kennedy Airport in New York City the evening of November 9th and touched down the next morning in Frankfurt. You couldn't fly directly into West Berlin. You had to fly to West Germany and then take either Pan Am, Air France, or British Airways from West Germany to West Berlin. So when we got on the commuter flight from Frankfurt to West Berlin, I saw everyone reading newspapers with these huge banner headlines saying Die Mauer ist offen, which means the wall is open. And I'm thinking, what? Like, what is going on? I'm thinking, is my German not as good as I think it is? Or maybe is November 10th the equivalent of April Fool's Day in Germany? What the heck? So I'm sitting there really wondering when the pilot gets on the intercom and he says, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't heard, the Berlin Wall fell last night and we are flying into history. Wow. I could not believe it. I was a graduate student writing my dissertation on the Berlin Wall, and now suddenly it seemed to be coming down. It was just amazing. So we arrived in West Berlin. I was there for 10 days. I shared the incredible moments of jubilation with so many Berliners watching bulldozers come and remove pieces of the wall to create new entry and exit points between East Berlin and West Berlin. I stood in this line of people formed two lines on either side of the new crossing point to greet the East Berliners who were coming through, either on foot or in their cars. I mean, you know, I watched these people from the West hugging these people from the East. I watched them give them flowers, give them West German money, the Deutschmark, watch them give them champagne. I mean, people were crying. People were hugging. It was just incredible. And in fact, the word most associated with those hours after the Berlin Wall opened was Wahnsinn, which means crazy. You know, all these people were standing there saying, you know, it's Wahnsinn. This is Wahnsinn. This is crazy. This thing that people thought could never happen had happened, and happened peacefully that weekend in West Berlin. So the wall fell, what was Thursday night to Friday night, November 9th to 10th. So now it's Friday the 10th, and then you've got the weekend. 2 million East Germans visited the city of West Berlin that weekend. Now, there were only 2.5 million people living in West Berlin. So the population almost doubled over the weekend with all these visitors. The main street in West Berlin, sort of the equivalent of Fifth Avenue in New York, is called the Kurfürstendamm or the Kudamm. Well, they had to close the Kudamm to traffic because there were just mobs and mobs of East Germans strolling the main street, looking at the storefronts, looking at all the goods that they didn't have in East Berlin, going to movie theaters, going to the most famous department store, which is six stories. It's called KDW, sort of like Harrods in London, this most amazing store. The top floor was the food floor, and they have like hundreds of different kinds of sausages. And of course, Germans love sausages, what we would call hot dogs. You know, that floor with the food was packed with East Germans. Others were going to visit family or friends that they hadn't seen, you know, sometimes in decades. So it was such an amazing, joyous experience that I will never forget.
Professor Harrison goes on to talk about Günter Zabowski, who was an East German politician who served as an official of the Socialist Unity Party of Germany, which was the ruling party during most of the existence of the German Democratic Republic. Zabowski gained worldwide fame in November 1989 when he improvised a slightly mistaken answer to a press conference question that raised popular expectations much more rapidly than the government planned. And so massive crowds gathered the night of the Berlin Wall, which forced its opening after 28 years. Soon afterward, the entire inner German border was opened.
So given that I was on the plane when this was all occurring, I didn't get to see what became a very famous or infamous press conference where one of the top East German leaders had gone live at an international press conference to give a report on what the leadership was deciding. There was a lot of pressure on the East German leadership to reform, including to allow freedom of travel. East Germans had been escaping in various ways, inspired by Gorbachev's reforms. And so the East German leaders had said, okay, we're going to modify our travel law. In communist countries, there was no freedom of travel. You were not free to just leave, and you were definitely not free to travel to the West. So they had announced that there was going to be a new travel law that basically said, you still have to apply. It's still not automatic, but basically, trust us. Now we're going to let more of you go visit the West. And you don't have to have a specific excuse like a family member is getting married or a family member has died and you're going to the funeral. So this was, you know, basically what they were trying to announce. But Günter Zabowski, who was there, was not prepared. He hadn't been at the key meeting of the leadership where they discussed this new travel law. He hadn't even looked at the notes he had been given very carefully before the press conference. So in the press conference, when journalists asked him, you know, what does this mean and when does it take effect? You see him ruffling through his papers, looking confused and sort of annoyed and irritated. Finally, he says, you know, immediately, without delay. And one of the journalists says, well, what does this mean about the Berlin Wall? And he's like, well, all border crossing points, you know, this is possible at all border crossing points. That's the last question, you know, ends it quickly. And so then tens, hundreds, and then thousands of people headed to the borders, the crossing points, to find out, you know, was this real? Could they? Except this wasn't supposed to happen. So the guards had no orders. They were totally surprised and kind of overwhelmed by the thousands and thousands of peaceful citizens showing up at the border and saying, didn't you see that press conference? Like, let us through. And so finally, 4 hours, 4.5 hours after that press conference ended at 7, at like 11:30 that night on November 9th, finally, the first person, Harold Jaeger, at the border crossing point of Bornholmerstrasse, opened the gates and let people walk across into West Berlin. Harold Jaeger had been begging for hours his superiors to like give him some sort of orders of what he should do. And his superiors kept saying, basically, you are exaggerating the situation. They basically didn't believe that he really had thousands of citizens standing there yelling. And finally, he got so frustrated and he was afraid, you know, what if somehow violence breaks out? What if one of my guards with the gun, you know, shoots by even by mistake somehow? He thought, you know, this is too risky. And my superiors are sort of no use. So I'm opening the gate.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
From here, Professor Harrison goes on to describe her first night in Berlin. And in particular, she discusses the spy bridge, which connected West Berlin to Potsdam, East Germany.
My first night in Berlin, our group met with our hosts and they brought some people who were interested in meeting Americans. And one of them, who was an English teacher, asked me if I would like to go with her in her car. She was a Berliner, and drive around to some of the key checkpoints and see what was happening. And I thought that was amazing. I had only been to Berlin once the previous summer, and thank God I had been there to see what it was actually like when the wall was standing. But to have that chance with a born and bred Berliner was amazing. And in particular, we went to what is known as the spy bridge, the Glienicke Brücke, which connected West Berlin to Potsdam, East Germany. The border was right in the middle of that bridge. And that's where Francis Gary Powers, who had piloted the U-2 over the Soviet Union in 1960 and was shot down, that's where he was swapped for a Soviet spy. Tom Hanks is in a movie about called Bridge of Spies. It's all about this bridge. And so we went there. And again, it was just amazing to see these East Germans coming through, crying and laughing and screaming and just so happy that what had been separated. I mean, there's a bridge over this beautiful body of water. They could see West Berlin, but they weren't allowed to go there. And now here they are walking across the bridge and coming into West Berlin. It was just fantastic to watch. I also took the chance to go to East Berlin and see some of the demonstrations, because East Germans for months at that point had been demonstrating in greater and greater numbers, calling on the communist government to really liberalize, if not like, you know, go away and form a different kind of government. Well, the first time I tried to get on the metro to go from West Berlin to East Berlin, I couldn't possibly, because it was packed with East Berliners coming in the opposite direction. I mean, even trying to enter a station, I was faced with this sea of people coming out of it. And I thought, okay, forget it. I'm not going over the weekend. It's too many people. So I waited till the next week. And then it was easier to take the metro, you know, 15 minutes from where I was in West Berlin into the heart of East Berlin and go to a big outdoor demonstration. And that was amazing to see some of these brave people who kept taking to the streets with huge banners saying, you know, we are the people. You have to pay attention to us. We want freedom of travel. We want freedom of assembly. All these things. I was slightly nervous, but it was also very exciting to be with them.
From here, Professor Harrison gives us insight into what the border soldiers were doing after the Berlin Wall fell and what they were doing with the crowds.
When I made my way to the Berlin Wall at the Brandenburg Gate on the morning of November 11th, so Saturday morning, there were East German border troops standing on top of the wall, peacefully just standing there, talking with people. But that was because the whole previous 24 hours, private citizens from East and West had been sitting on the wall there and celebrating and drinking and singing and hugging each other. And it was a huge party. The only place along the Berlin Wall that had a wide enough span at the top of it to, in fact, sit was at the Brandenburg Gate. Otherwise, the top of the wall was this rounded thing. Picture it like half of a metal tube, kind of, so that you couldn't get a grip. If you were trying to escape, if you somehow got a ladder and climbed up, even if you could get your hands on top, there was no way to sort of really get your footing there. Only at the Brandenburg Gate, which of course had a ton of troops around it, keeping an eye on it when the wall stood, only there could people sit, which they had been sitting and standing and cheering. And for one thing, the East German border guards, as well as the West Berlin police, were a little worried, you know, there are people drinking and partying, somebody might fall off and get injured. So the East German police were standing on top of the wall for a while to make sure that that couldn't happen. So I have this great picture of me standing in front of them. They're up on the wall. I'm standing in front of the wall. And there were pieces of the wall all over the ground there because people had been there hacking off pieces. People always wanted a piece of the wall from the West, because from the West, people had painted on it. You wanted a piece with colorful paint on it. And there were many pieces, and I stooped down and picked up a bunch of those pieces and still have those to this day.
From here, Professor Harrison goes into some detail about German reunification and gives some spectacular insight as to why the date falls on October 3rd and not November 9th. Which is the date that the wall fell.
When people think of the end of the Cold War, the unification of Germany, the change in the world system, they think of November 9th, 1989, and the fall of the wall. Under normal circumstances, that would absolutely have been the date that the Germans chose to unite the country a year later. When the wall fell, no one knew what was going to happen. It was not guaranteed. There were all sorts of different views of what should happen now. But ultimately, the East German citizens just kept moving to the West, not just going to visit, but just kept moving, deciding, you know, we want out. we want the West German system. And ultimately, they voted for that. And on October 3rd, 1990, less than a year later, Germany united. The reason they did not choose November 9th for Unification Day has to do with German history, and particularly the Holocaust. In 1938, November 9th was Reichskristallnacht, the night of broken glass, the night that Nazis attacked Jewish businesses, synagogues, homes, cemeteries, Jewish people themselves, all over the country, including in Berlin. So that was a significant step in, you know, what ultimately became the Nazis' final solution and killing 6 million Jews throughout Europe. So with that heavy weight associated with November 9th, there was just no way the German government was going to be able to celebrate Unification Day then. However, in spite of that, every year, November 9th is still, for so many people, much more important than October 3rd, Unification Day, and certainly for Berliners. And on big anniversaries of the fall of the wall, the 20th, the 30th anniversaries, the emphasis is very, very strongly on the November 9th from 1989 instead of 1938.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information on eyewitness history, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's Beyond the Big Screen, and James Early's Key Battles of American History, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.